Hello, everyone. I'm Hal Eisner, and this is What the Hal? And, you know, every week, you know, we put out a what I like to think of as a quality podcast. We talk to interesting people. We explore interesting subjects. But for weeks now, my digital producer, Patrick O'Brien, has been hounding me to do just a one-man show, basically just to talk to myself. Now, I don't mind doing that, and, you know, I have a lot to say about me, but I don't know how much of that you'd be interested in. So what I did was I went out on social media, and on Facebook, on Instagram, on LinkedIn, on every form of social media, I asked my followers, and I hope you're among them, and if not, just go to Hal Eisner Journalist on Facebook or Hal Eisner on any other social media. And I asked all my followers to give me things to talk about during this podcast. And boy, I got a great response. So I'm going to try to answer some of your questions because they're actually things I would have talked about anyway if I didn't have them. And I'm going to start with Heidi Gallagher. And Heidi says, why did you pick journalism and what was the road like to get where you are today? And I think that's a great question. And I think that I would begin by telling you I didn't pick journalism. I would begin by telling you that in high school, I was in the high school band. I played saxophone, and I loved doing those Friday night, you know, football games and marching at halftime and all of that. And our local radio station in Dallas, Texas, KLIF, had a contest, and the contest was, you know, tell us on a postcard, why would you like to be reporting your high school football score and the outcome of your game on Friday night? Well, I thought, what a great way to meet girls, right? You know, be on the radio. So I sent in a postcard. And what happened? Well, I was either the only one from my school that sent in a postcard, or they actually pulled my name out of a box. I won. And I could tell you that's why I'm here today. And in part, that's true. I actually wanted to be a lawyer. I actually was thinking in high school, I'll go to college, I'll be a lawyer. And I still sometimes wonder if that might have been an interesting career to pursue. But that aside, when I went to college with the idea of being something else, what was the first thing I went and did? Well, the first thing I did was I got a gig so that I could have date money to take out the girls. Uh-oh, girls again. And so I, you know, I got a job at a local radio station, KEEL, Keel. It was a Lynn Broadcasting station in Shreveport, Louisiana. I was going to Centenary College. And a really nice school, a really interesting liberal arts college, beautiful red brick, ivy, hilly, squirrels running all over the place. And I got a job at this radio station. They had automation. And I would put the reel-to-reel music up on the machines. And then it had cart machines or decks that would hold 55 cartridges or cassettes. They didn't look like cassettes. They looked like another kind of cassette, but they were cassettes. And I would load those, and then I would do one of them and give the weather forecast, and I would plug it in. And then it was my job to follow what was on the log, make sure things were plugged in at the right time, and to make sure the automation was running properly. That was probably one of the very first automation systems in radio broadcasting. This is back in 69, along in there. And so I got that job. And then I went to a local TV station. I think it was KTBS in Shreveport, Louisiana, Channel 3. And Channel 3 was an ABC station, but this wasn't news. What I chose to do, because I was offered this job, was to sit in a little dark room, and the movies of the night would come to me, and I would use a little scratching device to scratch three little dots onto the film where the commercial break came. So when Master Control would see those dots, they would know it was time to play the commercials during the commercial break. And that was my job, and I got paid minimum wage for doing both of those things, and it was enough for date money. And so I'm thinking, you know, somehow this business is really sucking me in. You know, it's like a vacuum cleaner. We want Hal. We want Hal. And so I just finally decided that that was really the better course for me, broadcasting. And so I went to the University of Houston, where they had a communications school, and continued on my merry way. So that's kind of how I got into it. And where I am today is a very long journey. Because if you go back to 1970 or 69, and now it's 2019, just do the math. A lot of things happened over the years, and we're going to be talking about that when I'm answering some of your other questions, because some of you have sort of asked about how the news business has changed and things like that. And so I'm going to weave in the rest of my tale as we do that. Charles Mitchell Lippman says, how has the news business changed in the few years you've been in it? Well, I think he probably meant that a little tongue-in-cheek, because it was a lot of years. Right now, I'm in my 37th year of broadcasting television in Los Angeles, and I'm very proud of that, and hoping to make it a few more, but I'm very, very proud of that. And before that, there was 15 years of radio. So if you really want to do the math on this date and time, I've been in this business about 52 years. I know it sounds really difficult to get your head around that because I'm only 39. But yeah, it 52 years, and I started at the age of 16. So along the way, I got in at a point when things were somewhat fundamental. In radio, we were the means of instant communication. And that was what I really enjoyed. So I'd go to City Hall. I'd cover the council meeting. I'd do live reports from the press room every hour. And at that point in time, it was hard for television to be live. You had to carry big, bulky equipment. Things had miniaturized to the point that you could really have great live broadcasting. So I gravitated to radio in a big way. And that became sort of my strong suit, was doing live broadcasting on the radio. And I loved it a lot. Radio is a wonderful business. It was my first love, you know, as far as my career goes. And what is it that's different about radio than television? I can do that in one sentence. When you have a fire in television, the picture says 1,000 words, and so you have to find the other 1,000 words to help make the picture stronger. In radio, you draw a picture with your words. So I might say the flames were licking out from under the stairwell, and that would give you an idea of the ferociousness of the flames that were lifting up underneath the staircase, and that's how we would do that in radio. So radio was sort of my medium of choice at that point. And I worked at a number of different stations. I worked in Dallas, in Fort Worth. I worked in Houston. I worked in Shreveport, Louisiana. And I loved radio. And I never really thought that there was much of a chance that I would ever really get into television. I will tell you how that happened in just a moment, because I want to go to another question. And let's see what we got here. John Brooks says, growing up in Texas, did you feel like a stranger in a strange land? And when I got to Los Angeles, I did. So how did I get to Los Angeles? Well, I mentioned that one of the cities I worked at was Fort Worth, Texas. The radio station was KRXV Radio 15, XV being the Roman numerals for 15. And I always used to have fun like that. If I was doing a story about a band and I would get to my tag at the end and I would say, Hal Eisner, KRXV Radio 15. But instead, I would go, Hal Eisner, KRXV Radio 15. So that might be the drum beat. But I would always find something to make some noise in between those four call letters, just as sort of an unusual signature. And it was kind of fun. On serious stories, I didn't do that, of course. But I did do it on the fun stories. Well, the news director of that station was a fellow named Larry Lamont. Larry Lamont was this wonderful guy, always upbeat, very enthusiastic. And he encouraged me to leave Houston, come to Fort Worth, where he was setting up a new radio station, KRXV, that was going to be an NBC news and information station. And news NIS is what the product was called. And it was a format, a wheel format, like a circle and like a pie, and certain pieces of the pie were certain kinds of news coverage, and it was a 24-hour news operation. It was a great job, and I worked with some wonderful people there. Jim Mikleshevsky, for one. Jim later became NBC's Pentagon correspondent, and there were a lot of great people I remember, Bob Rail, and just lots and lots of people that were really, really, really good broadcasters. And Larry calls me one day and says, I'd like you to, he gets a job with CNN, and he says, I'd like you to come to work for me at CNN. He's taking over the bureau job in Dallas, and I didn't see myself being able to do that. In fact, I got out a little bit because I was very frustrated during the Nixon years when the only way to get a pay raise was to move to another station, and there were wage freezes because of the economy. And I sort of thought, well, maybe I need to step back a little bit. So I did, and I did something else for a little short period of time. But in order not to get myself sucked back into a business I was frustrated with at the moment, I sort of set up some parameters. And the parameters were this: I will not take another job. If it's radio, it has to be television. All right? That was parameter number one. And since I have a hard time saying no, it had to be that that job at a TV station had to be a television network. ABC, CBS, NBC, whatever. I knew that with no television experience, somebody at a network wouldn't hire me. I just had no experience. To make it even a stronger case, I said it had to be in Los Angeles or New York, because in the second and first markets of the United States, I knew nobody would ever give me a job. I had no experience in television. So guess what? Larry, who was my news director at KRXV Radio, gets this job with CNN, offers me a job in Dallas. What do we got here? We got television. It's a network. But it's not in Los Angeles or New York, so I turned him down. He goes to San Francisco. He offers me another job because he believes, based on the work we had done together, that I can make this transition. And so I thought, well, okay, it's television, it's network, it's California, but it's not Los Angeles or New York. No. And so I turned that down. I know some of you are saying you're nuts, right? But that's just the way I felt about it. And then guess what? Larry became the bureau chief of CNN in Los Angeles. Now, he offers me a job. It's television, it's network, and it's in Los Angeles. I never, ever dreamed, ever, that those things would come together like a line of planets. It was just, it had to be. It just had to be that it was destined to happen, because how could all that happen like that? Well, whatever the good fortune was that caused that to occur, I came to Los Angeles. That's 37 years ago, and that's how I got to L.A. When I got to L.A., John Brooks, and I saw how big this place was, I was frustrated. I was like, this place is too big. I was ready to go back to Texas every day because I felt really out of place. I really did feel like a fish out of water. And as John sort of said, it was like being a stranger in a strange land. And it took me about a year, I think, before I was actually able to say, okay, you know what? I only use this part of Los Angeles. I don't use all of Los Angeles. I don't go to lunch in Pacoima. You know, I don't go shopping in Torrance. I don't use all of this area. I use certain pieces of it. My job is in this part of town, Hollywood. I live in the San Fernando Valley. That's another part of town. And once I reduced down in my head what I thought L.A. was to me, then I became a lot more comfortable. Then I was able to get on the freeway and start seeing in my mind where the exit ramp was. Because when I first got here, put me on a freeway, I wouldn't have known where the hell to go. Well, I'm sorry, where the hell to go. So, you know, it's kind of like it was a process. And then about a year into it, I really felt like, you know what? I love L.A. I do. I like this town. There's a lot to like about this city. And I really was feeling that there was a lot of great stuff going on here that really was something that was very appealing to me in a very big way. So I come to Los Angeles. I go to work for CNN. We go through some management changes, which causes me to go through some changes. I end up going local, and I start working at Channel 11 back in, oh gosh, what was it, 1985? Yeah, it's a couple of years after I came here, and I go to work for Channel 11, Channel 5, and Channel 13 freelance. Now, this was crazy because I was freelance. I had to work, and I couldn't get a full-time job, so I might be at Channel 11 on a morning shift and then be on the 12 noon news with Bill Smith and Nancy Nelson at the time, and then they'd call me from Channel 5 across the street, and I'd go to KTLA across the street, and I'd be on the nighttime news. And then I'd have a story on the 10 o'clock news. But guess what? I'd left a story on the for the 10 o'clock news on Channel 11. I'd be opposite myself. Now, the news directors would come to me and say, well, you can't do that. And I'd say, well, I just need a full-time job. And if you can't give me a full-time job, I'll have to take whatever work comes my way. And that's what I did until Channel 11 did hire me. And that freelance period where I was doing 5, 11, and 13 came to an end. After being at 11 for a while, I ended up going to 13 and took a full-time job there. And I was there for a number of years until such a time that Rupert Murdoch and his company purchased Channel 13 to make a duopoly out of KTTV and KCOP, and then I came back to Channel 11. The moral of that story was be careful about how you leave your relationships, because you may cross over the bridge back to an old job, not by your own doing. And so when I came back to 11, I didn't know how I was going to be received, but I was received in such a wonderful way. There were people here like Bob Sudock, who had been here for years in engineering. And Bob, big old guy, big old teddy bear, gave me a big old hug and said, welcome home. Welcome home. What a great thing to hear. And I heard it from several people, and I did suddenly feel like I had come back home. It was really incredible. And now all these many years later, after that purchase, of KCOP, I really do feel like I never left KTTV because of the way my career has happened here in Southern California. So, you know, yeah, we've gone through a period where it felt to me like I was a fish out of water. We've gone through a period where I went through many changes in my career. But, you know, one of the things that was very consistent was that I kept working. There was never a period of time that I wasn't working, out covering the news, doing something here in this city, a city that I've really, really come to love. I think that Nancy LeMay's question here on Instagram is very good. She says, what's different about the various cities you've worked in? More precisely, did they have noticeable differences from one another? How did you transition from radio to TV? Well, I just sort of explained that part. And was that challenging? And I would tell you it was challenging. I would tell you that the idea of writing for television, having written for radio, was such a different science that it really was tricky. I also remember the first interview I did when I came to Los Angeles. I don't know if I was set up, but my boss, Larry Lamont, went with me on some of the stories. The first thing we went to do was interview Bob McAdoo with the LA Lakers. Bob McAdoo, if you remember McAdoo, was this incredibly tall basketball player, so tall that, or at least I'm so short, when I put my microphone up there to try to get it to his mouth, I was on my tiptoes. That's how tall this dude was. And so that was the first thing I did when I came to LA. But I can tell you it was challenging because the writing was difficult. Being able to write and being able to give instructions on where to put video and being able to understand when I was doing interviews exactly, you know, how would those play out in stories and what kinds of things did I really need to have in order to tell a good story? That was stuff that took a long time for me to be able to learn, really in many cases on my own, although I had wonderful photographers at CNN like Dave Rust and other people whose names are slipping by my brain right now, but great people who really made a difference and tried to guide me through how to do a good stand-up, how to write a good line, Sandy's wife, Larry's wife, Sandy Lamont, was a huge help in trying to help me get a better handle on how to write for television as opposed to how to write for radio. I think with regard to the cities, Nancy, the character of every city I was in was very different. Shreveport, Louisiana was a small city. Not as small as some towns that I've seen. Like, I was up in Sherman, Denison, Texas for a short time, and that place was really teeny tiny. But most of the cities, Dallas, Fort Worth, Houston, were all pretty good size. It was really when I made the leap from Texas to Los Angeles that I felt that culture shock and that sort of sense of, where am I and what am I doing here? And it was a real interesting time in my life to sort of, you know, get these sort of concepts of what's different between radio and television through my thick skull. But I did, and I got better, and I was always the way I saw it. I was always a work in progress, and you know, when you're a work in progress, you have to accept your failures as well as having to accept your successes. And so, you know, that's what I did. You know, there's many, many other thoughts here. Like Rick Cuevas says, the 70 years of KTTV, the people in the news, Stan Chambers, Bill Welch, the old restaurants, even the drive-in from Simi, how has all that changed in your time here? Well, the KTTV 70 project that we have going on at KTTV Fox 11 right now is extraordinary. I will talk to you about that in 1 second. But Stan Chambers, one of the finest, kindest men I've ever known, was a broadcaster here in Los Angeles when I first came to town. He had been on TV since, I think, the day they hit the switch on KTLA. And everybody loved Stan Chambers. May he rest in peace. Stan Chambers always had a good word for me, always was nice, always was gentle, always was welcoming. If I came to a story a little late, Stan would say, let me catch you up on what's going on out here. He was just a wonderful human being, a wonderful, decent, kind man, worth emulating. And I always sort of looked at Stan as coming from the school of don't rock the boat. And it sort of was an idea that I thought was a good one to embrace, because the more you rock the boat, the more you have a chance of sinking. And I always wanted to kind of look at things from a high road and a more diplomatic approach. And so sometimes I would struggle to try to find that lane, but that's what I would do. Stan Chambers eventually, he passed away, but prior to that, I had the opportunity to name an award for the Associated Press after him, and I called that the Stan Chambers Award for Extraordinary Achievement. It could be for life achievement. It could be for certain coverage. It could be for changing laws. It could be for whatever a journalist might do. But that was an award that I named after him in life, and I actually surprised him when he was at the podium of the award ceremony, giving out another award, announcing that we were going to name one after him, and that was a wonderful feeling. There were a lot of really great people in Los Angeles on television when I came to town. There were people like Bill Stout and Jerry Dunphy and George Putnam. Just so many great people. And I thought, how am I going to last in this town? I won't last 2 weeks. You know, with the quality of broadcasters in this city. The reporters were unbelievably great. And here's a kid who's got very little experience and coming off of CNN, where I learned a lot, but trying to be as good as these guys were. And I really never thought I could really do that. But here we are 37 years later, and I guess I was wrong. I guess I was able to do that. But there were so many wonderful people in my path before me, and who treated me with such decency. And, you know, I always wanted to be that way with other people as well. So if that gives you, Rick, a little context of people and places, I think that the restaurants in many cases change with the times. I mean, you still have, you know, your standard coffee shops, and then you have your vegan restaurants. So I think, you know, as times change, so do the things around us. I didn't always live in Simi Valley, so I didn't always drive from Simi Valley. But I think that I would tell you that the change from Simi Valley, driving from there to West LA where I work and back, has not changed at all. The 405 is still a miserable drive. It is what it is. I love it on holidays. So on holidays when there are no cars, it's a love-hate relationship I have with the 405. There are times I love it. There are times I hate it. But it's a necessity. There's not much I can do about it. I really have to take that route to get to work. And so I'd say that, you know, things have changed, but not everything has changed. Jerry Archer says, would like to know what one story that you can't forget, your all-time number one all these years you've been on TV. I have a hard time answering that question. People ask me all the time, well, what was the most incredible story, or what was the worst story, or what was the best story? You know, it's really hard. I mean, I probably put out 300 or so stories a year. Times 37 years. How many stories is that, Patrick? Let's see. Let's do the math. How many? About 10,000 stories. God, that gives me a headache. 10,000, that's a lot of stories. So it's hard to say there's one story that's special. I mean, obviously, some of the more traumatic. What did you figure out with your calculator? 11,000. You were close. Pretty good. I think that, you know, any of the traumatic stories, the massacres, the horrible fires, the stories where there has been incredible violence. I think all of those sort of things just can't get out of your head. It's not things you want to remember. It's just things that just won't go away because they're so bad. Good stories have been maybe stories where something I did helped to affect a law. Maybe something I did made somebody smile. Maybe something I did made somebody think. Those are sort of goals, I think, are always in a journalist's mind. You know, we're there to tell you information. And sometimes we can entertain you. Sometimes we can affect your moods, good, bad, and indifferent. And we're there to be the voice box of what's happening in our community. I always look at it like a big bulletin board where you walk by the bulletin board and you see what's going on today that people have posted up there. And that's what, to me, television or media is all about. We're going to give you information. You're going to walk by the bulletin board and you're going to learn something. And whether it's radio or television, I'm not sure it matters much. But again, getting back to stories, I mean, I've been so lucky. I mean, after the Rodney King beating, Rodney King was, there was so much interest in wanting to talk to him that they set up a little interview area at the sheriff's department, and they set up three fish bowls. And in one fish bowl, they put the name of newspaper and wire people. In another one, they put the name of radio people. In another one, they put TV people. And guess who won? I won. So I was one of the three people that was chosen as that were chosen as pool reporters on behalf of all of our colleagues in Los Angeles. And so we sat down with Rodney King. We talked with Rodney King, and all of the city carried it live on, I think, all the stations. It was such a big thing back then. And so that was something that was memorable, sitting there talking to him about what he had experienced. But I also think, you know, there are memorable stories not because of big things. I mean, when I went to cover the Houston hurricane, Hurricane Harvey, there were a couple of moments that were particularly touching when I was talking to young people or older people that were, you know, moved by what had happened. They were crying. They had lost stuff. They were, you know, very emotional, and they would, I don't know, we bonded, and they would sort of hug me or look for some consolation from me, and I wanted to provide that sense of stability in the moment, and those are memorable stories too. You know, memorable stories aren't just somebody shoots somebody else. Memorable stories aren't just a fire that burns down a whole city. Memorable stories can be moments. And I think there have been many, many, many moments in my life of all kinds of stories. The thing that's really interesting about doing what I do is that at the end of the day, you see your story on TV, and that's sort of the gratification of your work. You spend all day doing it, you put it on TV. Teachers, they spend a whole semester until they see how the grades come out, and that's the gratification of their work. Everybody's got a different sort of, at what point do you get gratified by what you do? For me, it's a daily basis of either I liked what I did or I didn't like what I did. But, you know, I think that there are lots of stories I like. I do. There are lots of stories I like. And maybe part of that is because if I get assigned a story that I don't like, I'm going to find a way to like it. Because that's my lot in life. That's my story. And I'm not going to say I don't like it. Here, I don't want to do it. Give it to somebody else. I'm going to learn to like that story, and I'm going to find reasons to like it. And by the end of the day, I'll bet you anything that that story is going to be better because I made the decision that I was going to try to like that story. So, you know, I think that I would love to give you an answer that my favorite story was this interview, maybe the interview I did with Dustin Hoffman, maybe interviewing President George Herbert Walker Bush, maybe it was something like Governor Schwarzenegger, President Reagan, whatever it happens to be. I'd love to tell you that was my favorite story. I really can't because there are just so many of them that I think that it'd be very hard to isolate. So I hope you understand that. Because, you know, I get this question all the time, and I always try to answer it the same way, that there are so many stories that I do like. I think, you know, I think that television is an interesting medium. And somebody had asked, I don't remember who it was, how has the medium changed? When I got into this business, it was three television stations and some radio stations. Cable hadn't gotten in yet, and we were just coming out of film and moving into video. And you had colleagues working with you on a daily basis. You go out on a story, and you'd have a photographer, and you'd have an audio person. Over the years, as equipment miniaturized and got smaller, then that got reduced to maybe just a photographer who did audio and video, and you just had a two-man band. We also now see that there are what we refer to as MMJs, which is multimedia journalists, which is a single person that can report, shoot, edit, and broadcast. And so there are lots of changes that have occurred over the years, but a lot of that is because equipment has changed over the years. Technology has changed over the years. And with that sort of thought, I kind of want to leave you with this idea. Right now, you can watch a story I do on your phone. You can watch a story I do on television. You can watch a story I do on your laptop, on your computer, on your tablet. Someday, and I hope I'm working long enough to experience this, you're going to be able to have a hologram in your hand of Hal, a hologram, telling you the news. And so let's see how long it takes before that happens, but I bet you anything that someday there'll be holograms. I love the way that sounds. Anyway, I hope that answers some of your questions. This is kind of fun. Maybe I'll do this again. And, you know, if you haven't subscribed, I sure hope you will. We've got well over 30 or more podcasts out there. We keep adding them every week. We're doing this for you. We hope you enjoy it, and we hope that you'll give us some stars on the page and ask for your reaction and share with your friends. Let your friends know about us because we want to be the biggest and the best podcast, right? I mean, what the hell?